Greetings. This is Hear Her Sports Podcast for everyone who loves stories by and about female athletes and other women in sport. I'm your host, Elizabeth Emery. A big welcome. Today's episode is a poem of water, rivers, and the cadence of music in life and in athletics. My guest is Ping.
My name is Ping Wang, or Wang Ping. The Chinese way is Wang Ping. American way is Ping Wang. Please call me Ping.
My conversation with Ping is full of stories and adventures. Ping is so many things. She is the author of 15 books, a teacher, an installation artist, founder and director of Kinship of Rivers Project, and a water traveler. She's also a competitive rower. Ping grew up in China during the Cultural Revolution. It wasn't until she was in her mid-20s when she got into China's best college, Beijing University, that she first discovered her athletic body. And I'll let her tell that story. Ever since those first days in the gym, she has found stunning success and great power in multiple sports, martial arts, figure skating, and canoeing, just to name a few. In the episode, find her ideas about how creativity and sports connect. I believe they do, and Ping's insights are just so cool. Watch for a common thread throughout our conversation about what it's like to be an older athlete, or maybe I should say an aging athlete. Despite dealing with injuries, old and new, Ping still rows 10 to 15,000 meters every day on the Mississippi River. During the warm months, not now, of course, in the cold of winter. At the very end, Ping wraps things up with strong words about aging well with nature and how not to waste gifts. It was an honor to have Ping on the show. She and I lived in New York City at the same time, way back in the day, and are now both Midwest women. So I think of her as a friend and hope to meet her in person one day soon. Ping and I thought it might be possible to record while she was in Mongolia on an upcoming trip. We ended up catching a bit of singing inside a yurt. Well, hello and welcome. I'm so glad you're here. And I'm really happy that this recording worked out before you head out on your trip to the Yellow River.
Yes, me too. Yeah. And I'm so excited that you are open to do some broadcast from Mongolia.
Yeah, that's really exciting. Can you tell us more about the trip?
Yeah, well, I have not been back since 2013. I did an expedition along the Yangtze River. I was doing my Kinship of Rivers project. And after I traveled along the Mississippi four times doing the prayer flags and with poetry and art and music and food, I gathered about 2,000 prayer flags. And not just from Mississippi River, but also from Amazon. I visited Peru and Venezuela and other places and Europe and many other rivers in America. So as I promised, I brought all these prayers back to the Yangtze and bring it starting from Shanghai and all the way to the source of the Yangtze River, which is in Tibet. And after that, I promised the makers that I will bring them to the Everest, which I did. So that was a really a lot of planning, a lot of funding, and a lot of organization, and kind of took me out for 10 years, for about 5 to 8 years. Then I was ready to go back again to see my mom. So I started planning going back in 2019. And then I I actually had three trips planned back to China, doing lectures and doing more to see my mom in 2020. Then COVID hit. So that stopped me for three more years. And now I'm back. I'm leaving on Sunday. This time I'm going to travel along the Yellow River. I've been translating poetry, of course, from the Yangtze River, because I've traveled so much along the Yangtze River. I was born in Shanghai, by the way. And I'm a Tibetan Buddhist, so I always ended up like in Shanghai. That's the end of the Yangtze, then always traveled along the Yangtze River through Sichuan, Yunnan, and then Tibet. As I translated the poets, I just realized I also needed to follow the poets and their poetry along the Yellow River. So, and actually my father's side was from Shandong, which is the end of the Yellow River. And you know, both rivers, the Yellow and Yangtze, they all came from the same place in Tibet. Actually, Tibet Plateau, it's called the Sanjiangyuan, three river source. So the Yangtze River, Yellow River, and the other is Nujiang, which actually flows towards southwest and then into Mekong. So I'd like to actually translate and publish an anthology of Chinese poets from the two rivers, which are also the cradles of Chinese civilization. But for me as a translator, I call it measure the land and river with my body. So I need to walk and hopefully ride horses if it's not too cold, and dance and sing along the Yellow River. And hopefully I can also paddle if the river is not frozen. The ideal time, of course, is summer, spring, summer, and fall. But as a comparative rower, those are the seasons that I have to train and also travel around the world to compete. But that's okay. You know, the winter. I live in Minnesota, and I'm used to cold weather. I just want to tell you a little funny story about how I traveled the Mississippi River. One year I decided on New Year's Day to start my whole Mississippi River expedition. I decided to start from Lake Atasca on New Year's Day, starting with skiing, right? I want to use different traveling methods. And on the way there to the source, I purchased a new ski. I was convinced to get a very expensive new skis, and which is waxed, right? And I've never used a waxed ski, and I have no idea how to wax it. So. It was below 25 degree negative, right, Fahrenheit. And the ski, just like every three, I started ski and I will flop face down into the ice and snow. And it was below 25. So you can imagine, like just my whole body, like everything in me, inside and out, I was just frozen. And it was... it was really painful, but it was really hilarious.
Well, now it's hilarious.
I know. It was. It was also kind of dangerous because,
sure,
like there are some hills, right? You go down and just suddenly you stopped, right? You just like tumble. You face down and tumble down, you know? So I was younger at that time, so I can still endure constant falling. Not now. you know. I walked into a gym class in 1984 at Beijing University, and you know, to get into Beijing University was second grade elementary school education was already a miracle, because I taught myself everything and took the exam and got into Beijing University. Of course, I did not know anything about science, so I have to forego, give up all the like math, like the, all the science sections, because there's no way for me to teach myself, and there are no books that I can learn from, and no teacher. But I can teach myself English, Chinese, and history, and geography. So that's why I decided to give up all the science and get perfect scores on all the humanities. And I thought I would be lucky to get into any university, but I actually got into Beijing University. So that was already a miracle. And then the next miracle is because my English was so perfect, because I actually taught myself with Doris Lessing's Golden Notebook and through a dictionary. And I recited many sections from Anna. I didn't know the book was written by Doris Lessing at that time, because there was no cover and there were many missing pages. But somehow I uncoded the book and through memorization. And during the test, right, exam, college entrance exam, I cited a lot of Anna's passages. And they thought my English was really good. So they promoted me to the second grade, the sophomore in Beijing University. And then because of that, my gym class was also promoted. So I walked into the promoted gym class, and that gym teacher happened to be the coach, the head coach of Beijing University gymnastic, rhythmic gymnastic, right? And after the class, she beckoned me to the uneven bars and just threw me onto it. I had no idea, I had no training, nothing ever in any athletic training, because I have no school. Like, after I finished my second grade, the Cultural Revolution began, so there was no school for me. I just followed her hands. When I came down, she said, "Do you want to join the team?" And I said, "Yes." And after 2 months training, I got her gold medals one after another. Whoa. And for that, yeah. And that was an even bigger, like, a revelation to me. Because I was already 22, 23 years old, and was, you know, because of the Cultural Revolution delay, you know, college was closed for 10 years, right? And so I got in at a kind of like pretty old age. And gymnasts, usually gymnastics, you're supposed to train when you were five, right? And I have nothing. My body was like blank page, right? So I thought, wow, like, my body has infinite potentials, right, if I let it be. And so that was just like a huge, huge, just like breakthrough or realization of what I could do, right? So when I came to United States, then at the end of the Beijing University, I just somehow got into figure skating. And I came to America, I started skating. When I got my first high-paying job at the bank teaching Chinese to those bankers, when I got my first paycheck, I just ran and got myself like the most expensive skates. And I started skating. Then I moved to Minnesota, and there was a lot of rinks, right? And so I found a coach, and I started skating. And Then I got a gold from the World Amateur Figure Skating, you know, competition.
Wow.
So, yeah. So, oh, actually, I got into fencing and in New York, and that's how I met my the father of my children at the fencing club. My coach was a Russian fencer. He kept saying, like, Ping, if you were younger, I would train you for Olympics. You are a born fighter, right? And that's the first time someone actually told me. I think the first time without telling me was my gymnastic teacher, coach, you know. Just like, even though I had no training, he just saw something in me, right? And he enlisted me to her gymnastic team, you know. I became her captain pretty quickly, you know. So, yeah. Even though I didn't start young, I started pretty late. I just got into whatever sports I walked in, I picked it up. Because I have no fear, I'm curious, I'm playful. And I just thought, if I lose, what do I lose, right? You know, and I'm not afraid of falling, right? I have a black belt in Okinawa style karate. We don't call it karate. Karate is for Korean martial art. And I also studied Tai Chi sword and Shaolin with different masters. And one day I walked into the dojo. My coach was like, people were practicing Japanese sword. There was a piece of paper hanging from the ceiling. Everyone was cutting from left, right, center, left, right, center, right, was the sword. And they've been practicing for years. And I just said, can I try? And my coach said, sure. And he handed me a sword, and I started cutting. And I won the contest. So then he said, you should have the sword. It's yours. And it's priceless. It's many years old. Has a lot of a lot of blood on it. And I said, no, I can't take that. It's just too precious, too heavy a gift. He said, it's calling your name. Just take it. So I still have that sword, right? And he just took a token price, right? Money. He said the same thing, Ping, you are a born fighter, you're a warrior. And I carry those people's words, right? Blessings, I call them. I try to carry out their blessings and transfer the blessing to other female students and male students. I was a professor of poetry at McAllister College for 20 years. And my favorite students are actually, or I draw lots of students, athlete students, right? So the saying among them is, before you graduate from McAllister, you must take Ping's class, right? So I think I was, during those 20 years, I was transferring the blessing to the younger generations. And through teaching, I also realized, like, all the gifts, right? To be an athlete, to be a poet, to be an artist, to be a singer, painter. Like, those abilities have been given to us when we were born. Those are like our birthrights. And if we just allow it, right? We can do anything, basically. That's my belief, mm-hmm. right? Like, it doesn't have to be certain sport, right? If you find something that fits you, just go for it. It doesn't matter how old you are. You can do it.
I sure hope you're enjoying today's episode with Ping. If you are, please consider supporting the show with a cup of coffee. All of the support I receive from listeners through the Buy Me a Coffee platform and the Hear Her Sports Bookshop page go directly to editing and producing this podcast. which means your support increases the amount of media coverage for female athletes and women in sport. As mentioned in the intro, Ping has written many books. I've included a few in the recommended list on our bookshop page. However, once you are on our page, whatever you order supports Hear Her Sports. Go to hearhersports.com/books. Sports media coverage for women is on the rise, but primarily from small enterprises like this very podcast. We absolutely can use your help to keep us strong, growing, and well-fueled. Every donation is very much appreciated. Go to buymeacoffee.com/hearher or to the support tab on hearhersports.com. Also find there a menu tab for our bookshop page. Thank you.
Running should be simple. Just put on your shoes and go. And yet, when you try to learn about how to get better at it, especially as you age, you're confronted with conflicting advice, complicated workouts, and confusing nutrition trends that just won't work for you. On The Planted Runner, I'll share exactly how to run faster, longer, and feel great doing it at any age because you don't have time to waste. I'm Coach Claire Bartholik, and I went from not running at all in my late 30s to finishing a marathon in 2:58 at age 42, all on a plant-based diet. I've helped hundreds of runners achieve new personal records well into their 60s and even 70s with science-backed training, plant-based nutrition, and proven mental strength techniques. Each episode of The Planted Runner is like a private coaching session on the run where you'll learn from me and the guests I interview. You'll get actionable lessons to help you become a better runner every week and reach goals you never thought possible. Whether you're training for your first 5K or your 50th marathon, take along The Planted Runner on your next run. Let me show you how your best running is still ahead of you.
Now, let's get back to Ping and the connection between rowing, art, water, and the pulse of life. You were saying that at school, when you were teaching the athletes at school, were taking your poetry class.
Right.
That's fascinating.
Yeah. Yes.
What do you think was the, I mean, obviously you were the draw, but like, what do you see as the connection?
Well, cadence, the foundation for poetry is music, right? Then images. But the ground is cadence, is music. For athlete, for sports, if you don't have the cadence, right, you can't do sports, you know? Life is about cadence. I took 10 years to get a medical degree in traditional Chinese medicine, and half of the training is Western medicine. So my main focus is the brain, neurology, right, and neuroscience. Because of my different interests, my love for movement, right? So I somehow connected all these things, like our brain, our language, poetry, our bodies, language for cadence, right? And also the beginning, the birth of life and its journey. It's all based on cadence, our heartbeat, the pulse, you know. New York Times actually, they turned the sports section into athletic pulse. I think it's a really good title. The pulse is really the beginning of everything. Beginning of life, beginning of Earth, right? And also the beginning of the universe, the pulse, you know, the first heartbeat.
Is that what you like about movement?
Yes.
I'm just fascinated because, you know, I'm also an artist, and often this connection between art and sport is not easily understood.
Right.
But you've just explained it, or you've explained a big component of it.
Yeah. The cadence is also the force, right? I'm also very, very, I've been studying the quantum physics, right? The entanglement how do I explain? In art, right? We basically, like, the first thing, the impulse of the art is we pause, right? Everything's always in constant, you know, movement, constant movement, right? And the so-called noise or the movement or the distraction or just so many informations just flying around. And the art and the others is like the job is to pause that movement, that noise, and the capture that, like, what is it? So we took a grain from the mountains, a grain of sand from the mountain, and look at it, and then we see the entire mountain, we see the entire universe, and present it to the people who are too busy, you know, to appreciate, to understand, to feel. I just feel like as artists, as athletes, right, we experience that pausing moment, right, that fleeting moment of beauty and nirvana, right, to say, yes, I got it, you know.
You don't seem like a pauser, though, to me.
Well, I do pause.
A lot of movement.
Well, I do pause. I pause a lot every day. I have to pause like 2 to 4 hours writing. Like I sit, even though it hurts me a lot, my body, as my body ages, right? Sitting long hours is devastating, actually. But I have to do it, you know, that's the only way I can live. Then rowing 2 hours every day in the river, that is also my pause, even though it's measured with, you know, strokes, right? Stroke after stroke, stroke by stroke, right? That is my heartbeat that I can like actually feel it. I call it a conscious listening of my heartbeat, conscious feeling of my my consciousness, of my mind, and the awakened dreaming, because it's hard to control our sleep, it's hard to control our dreams. But when I row in the water, I can actively like push away or let go all the noises while being awake and enter that dream, the peaceful, the quiet space, right? And then do something very creative, very beautiful. And even if I do not do any creative work while rowing, I get active like rest. I call it active rest. You know, for my soul.
Yeah, it's good for your mind too. I always find that exercise gives me great ideas.
Yes, yeah. A lot of breakthroughs, like for my dissertation, which turned out to be a book, Aching for Beauty, for finding China. I was trying to finish it in New York, and our first son was born in New York too. Then we decided to move to Minnesota, St. Paul. And we actually, like, I gave a huge banquet on the floor. Actually, all the furniture is gone already. So all the great poets and writers and artists like Allen Ginsberg, you know, and other people came. We had a feast sitting on the floor. So then we just drove in a van through Maine, then took the ferry into Canada through Toronto, Vancouver, Quebec, and entered Minnesota from Grand Marais. And we hiked a lot in Canada. And I was in New York, I was really stuck on a few key, very important concepts about this, my dissertation. And it was all solved during my trek with my one-year-old son, Ariel, on my backpack, actually. So So I was really happy.
Yes. Well, let's talk some rowing. How did you get started on rowing?
Well, you will laugh. A guy who wanted to hang out with me, spend some time with me, he invited me to learn to row program. It's usually very difficult to get in, but somehow somebody backed out and there was a spot and he invited me to fill the spot. I said, okay, I'll give it a try. I thought it was really easy, right? Having done a gymnast and gymnastic and fencing and, you know, figure skating and karate. So I said, okay, I'll try. So after first day, I was hurting from head to toe, and I loved it. He got a few blisters on his hands, and he vanished. I never saw him again.
Oh.
and I stayed, and I just got hooked.
Yeah.
And also, like that day, right? We were like, you know, just going out in a big tugboat, and just really awkward, and you know, just got splashed everywhere. And then I saw a woman, older woman, carrying his red boat down the dock. And she looked so fit and so powerful and also so graceful. And that image, like she was holding the boat over her head as if she was holding the whole sky and the whole river in her hands, over her shoulder, over her head. And I was just like enchanted. I said, I would like to do that someday, holding the sky, holding the boat with the entire Mississippi in the boat. And I did that. And I'm now, really, every day I can hold a boat filled with the entire Mississippi River over my head. Metaphorically, of course,
yes,
right?
Of course. Yes.
But the symbol, of course, is just like tremendous. Like every day as I was holding the boat down the dock, right? Put it down and row 10 to 15,000 meters every day, you know, and I'm just grateful to that older woman athlete, just like how she inspired me.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. It's beautiful to be on the water too. And especially in those boats,
yes.
You're so low, you're almost sitting on the water.
Yes, yes, that's right. And rowing also, you have to be one completely with the water. The oars, the long oars, have to become your extension of your arms and the body and the core and the feet. Right. And that's why I mentioned after the first day of rowing, I was hurting from head to toe. I was just shocked, like, because I was doing everything every day, like, you know, I really like movements. I was figure skating. I was like doing yoga. I was doing martial art. Right. And I was picking up my kids, running around with my kids. And I was like, you know, taking my students paddling the entire Minnesota River, you know, camping, just everything, right? I thought I was like really athletic, right? God knows, like I was hurting from head to toe after the first day because rowing does, I know, rowing does like involve the muscles head to toe,
so
actually.
Much, yeah.
I'm not kidding.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, I'm talking about rowing being one with the river. So to be one with the river is not easy. You really have to pay attention, right? That's why rowing is just, for me, is just active meditation. Especially rowing in the river, the water changes section to section. The river likes to, you know, curve, right? And with each bend, the current changes. There's constant whirlpools and the rocks and deadheads, right? All changes how the river runs. And the oars entering the water, just each moment of the oars catching the water, drives through the water. You really have to feel with your entire being. And you have to react to it, right? Or go with it. And that forces you to just, you can't let your mind go. You cannot feel distracted. You really have to pay attention. So just imagine, right, in our normal life, right, if we can keep our attention focused just like for 1 minute, that's really like not easy already, right? Our mind is a monkey, right? Always wants to just, you know, climbing up and down, screaming, you know, all the time, right? But just imagine you have to keep your focus on for 1 to 2 hours, how much benefit you can get from that. So I feel really lucky that I can row, you know, I'm a rower.
Had you already started your water projects, your river projects, when you started to row?
No, I started river project a few years before.
Okay.
And once I started rowing, of course, I extended, blended right into rowing. So, yeah. So I used rowing as part of my project. I think after the 12 years of rowing, I have rowed the entire Mississippi like a few times already. So, paddling, talking about paddling, right? There are so many ways of traveling the river. I took my classes, poetry classes, to paddle the Mississippi River, the Minnesota River, which, you know, enters Mississippi at Fort Snelling, where I live, and paddle the Cinque River, the entire Cinque River. I also paddled the Columbia River, from the source at the Lake Columbia, and many other places. And paddling is quite interesting. And actually, I also paddled 10 days of the 365 river miles with Quapaw Canoe Company. And it was a really, really interesting expedition. I didn't realize Mississippi River is so wild, you know. we chased after the tugboats. When they pass, they make huge waves. So our canoe would just go after that, just ride those big waves, you know,
fun.
In and out. it was fun. It's dangerous, but
sure.
It's really
yeah.
fun. Yeah, yeah. And those big canoes are amazing. There are only very few who can still make those, you know, Voyager big canoes.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like a little boat, like, you know, little tugboats. 12 people, 12 of us. Like, we carry everything, unlimited amount of things. Water, food, you know, people, computers, sleeping bags, and art supplies. You know, we just paddle, then we camp on the sandbars, right? It's just fishing and cooking and picking fruit. And we even found some wild watermelons. You know, it was pretty amazing. Yeah, it's really amazing.
It seems like the rowing that you do, you know, like crew that you do, is so different from the paddling, because in the crew, you're competing and you're traveling around the world. You know, you mentioned that
yes.
your whole year is sort of based around the regattas that you're doing. Versus
yes.
these paddling, which is, you know, like understanding the water is much more communal, is, you know, like meeting and seeing and experiencing.
Yeah. Yeah, paddling is very communal. Yes. We are in the same boat. In the beginning, that trip, right, for that trip, the lower Mississippi canoe trip, there were like 8 people, 7 men and 1 woman. And I said, uh-oh, not good, because, well, it's not like 7 men, I'm the only woman, right? It's because in Chinese tradition, if there are 7 men and one woman, the fishermen would not set sail, because that's for sure the boat will flip or the storms will come, right? And it never fails in according to the Chinese tradition. You know, so I told the person in charge, I said, not a good sign. So he found other people to join us, right? And so it was really fun, you know. Yeah, and we also paddled down the river. We met with people and we stopped to make art and make prayer flags. And the rowers, I don't know, rowers seem not so interested in making art for some reason. I tried many times. I think their focus is just, you know, just compete and win, right? Or cry if they lose, you know, if we lose. Especially like, you know, for example, like in South Africa, the 2023 World Regatta, it was a really, really fun regatta. And one of the mixed quad that I was stroking, we were, it's really fierce competition, right? And we were ahead all the time from the very beginning toward the very last 100 meters, and they passed us. We lost by 0.002 seconds. Right? And now it just like, it was a great competition, but it just like really eat up from me. Like really just bugs me for like weeks and months, right? But of course, I'm really happy for the, because the boat that won beat us, they've been rowing together for all their life. They're from Duluth Rowing Club. And they are very experienced. They know how to charge at the last minute. And our boat is, you know, two Minnesota, one from Britain, the other from Belfast, right? And we really enjoyed it so much, you know. But we lost in the last, you know. And but it was good.
Yeah, you'll have to go back next time.
Yeah, we have to do it again, you know. Yeah. And there are many factors. But still, it was a good race, and yeah, I'm really happy with it, even though I was just so upset. But it's good upset, right? I learned a lot from that, you know, so yeah.
You talked a lot about, so far, about being an older athlete.
Yes.
And I've been talking to older athletes lately, so I wonder what your take is on it, because, you know, you started later, but you've been an athlete, you've been involved in movement for a really long time, and you've stayed fit. Mm-hmm. Like, how has it been changing for you? And particularly since you go on these adventures, like you're going on a very big trip to the Yellow River, you know, it's important to be fit to be able to do the adventures.
Yes, the being fit is very, very, very important. I think it's also for the mind. Now, my body is changing, right? Because I get injured more easily and I recover much slowly. The injury and a lot of old injuries just stop really bothering me. For example, I broke my tailbone doing figure skating. I just crashed on my tailbone so many times trying to learn certain, like, you know, jumps, yeah, axels. And so till the end, I had to stop because I was really hurting myself, you know. And when I was younger, my body can mask it, compensate, right? And now at this age, all the like old injuries just like coming out, right? So I have to actually, 2 years ago, I fell running from running because my old comfortable running shoes, just the sole just suddenly opened up, tripped me over. Like the sole literally like fell out, right? And opened up like in half. So, because I knew I shouldn't run with it, but I thought this is the last time, and I
it was the last time.
It was last time, yes. And it was like really cold, right? Actually, I was like running with my COVID sample to test my COVID result saliva for my trip, winter training camp, rowing training camp in Florida in a week, right? So I thought, oh, this is a good one. I'll just ran to train for my like 6 mile training, running training, right? And I fell halfway really hard. And I knew something was wrong. So I thought, all right, I just couldn't finish the running. So I just ran back and I limped running back home. Then in a few hours, my knee was swollen into like a basketball. I'm not kidding. And I just can't walk, can't bend, can't even use the toilet because I cannot bend, you know. So I just been hopping on one leg. So I just used my mind and said, Ping. And I knew, I think I shattered my kneecap, right? Because I did that before, skating. And I knew how it felt like, right? So I told my knee, just, you better get better before the camp. Because you need to go to the camp, right? So I used a lot of like massage, acupuncture, herbs, and painkiller. And I just bend, you know, and bend and try to just, because in order to row, I have to be able to bend my knee, right? So I did. I managed to bend my knee and I went to Florida and I said, like, I will nurse you after I come back from the rowing camp. And I did. And I'm still nursing the knee because I forced it too much.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. But the mind did play. The mind is really powerful. And our body will follow, you know, when the mind, of course, there's a price to pay for it afterwards. Right. Right. So right. Now I am doing physical therapy, which is very helpful, actually. I have to relearn how to walk, right? So my body is doing a complete reconfiguration. It's a really interesting process. It's painful, but it's really very interesting, you know, when you have to start from the base, right? But at the same time, I just thought, wow, I won all kinds of medals with only one leg, right? Which seemed like the symbol of my life. I hopped into Beijing University, which is like Harvard in China, right? On one leg, right? Because basically on the leg of humanity, right? I had no signs, right? You know, and now I hopped into competitive rowing scene on one leg, basically. And I'm really looking forward to restore the atrophied left leg, and then I can do even better in 2024, which I signed up for London, Germany, and then all over America, regardless.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
A big year. So have you made any adjustments to the upcoming trip based on your age, or you're just going full throttle and you'll hope for the best?
Oh, no. I never hope for the best. I always prepare for the best.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm daring, right? But also, sure. I'm very, very cautious. I don't like to just like do things, you know. I do sometimes. I do stupid things. And every time I do stupid things without proper preparation, I get into trouble. For example, I went skiing on New Year's Day this year in Colorado, Steamboat, right? And I never downhill skied. I thought I could do it because I was, a champion in figure skating. But I overestimated myself, and I also had a broken leg on the left leg, right? It was only 65% strength, you know. And of course, I kept falling on my left leg. And finally, I twisted I pulled the ligament on the interior side, the knee, and I pulled the muscle, the interior muscle on the left leg. So I have to start from over again, from zero again. Yeah. And my knee was swollen. So I thought, all right, no more. And that was really stupid. And I will, you know, be cautious. I have to be grateful for rowing because I haven't been able to walk properly. I've been limping for 2 years, right? I couldn't jump. I couldn't run. And I have been rowing because of the way the rowing works. I could row and compete, you know. So, and it's really, really good therapy for my leg. You know, it kept my leg, both legs strong, you know, the quads, you know. So, yeah, I'm really grateful for this sport.
You know, I'm sorry that you get injured so frequently, but I do love that you just say yes to so many things and jump in and try and, you know.
Yeah. That's great. About rowing, my plan and my dream is to row till my last breath. And I really hope I can do that, you know.
Yeah.
Yes. And I hope to keep dancing too. I'm a flamenco dancer, and also I love classical Chinese dance. And I'm really looking forward to learn some Mongolian dance. Have you heard some Mongolian music? It's amazing. I highly recommend there. Their ma tou qing, it's kind of like, it's a little bit similar to violin, mm-hmm. right? It's similar to that. And it's just, it's amazing. And the Mongolians are really, they know how to dance, right? So I hope my leg will be strong enough. By the time I arrive in Mongolia, I can learn some Mongolian dance.
That'd be wonderful. Yeah.
And ride horses. Yeah. Mongolian people are amazing. They are like me, right? Like very adventurous and like to laugh, you know, and just like go free. I don't like to feel restricted in certain area. And so they're like that. You know, the Chinese word is haoshuang.
I'm jealous of that trip. And it, sounds fantastic. Is there a way that you'd like to wrap up our conversation today?
Yeah, I'd like to, how should I say, aging is a process and it's really up to us, right? Aging is also a journey. It's up to us how to walk this journey, right? We can either just, you know, we don't have to like become just filled with sorrow or pills or aching or tubes. If we allow our mind and heart and body to flow, right? Just look at animals, right? How they age, like how they age so beautifully and gracefully, right? Like we are animals too, right? Don't ever forget that we are part of nature. We're part of that animal kingdom. So we're part of that life process, right? And we can age beautifully and gracefully and actively. And that is my plan. And I hope that's also every person's plan. We are all athletes by birth. It's our gift. We're all artists and poets and writers by birth. And it's our gift. Do not waste it. Just use it and have fun with it.
Well, thank you. That is amazing. Yeah.
Thank you.
May we all age that way. Thanks again.
Yeah. Thank you.
And that's the end of our show today. It was extraordinary to connect with Ping. I thank her for her generosity and making the extra effort to connect all the way from Mongolia. If you are interested in episodes with somewhat similar themes, I would suggest the following. Elizabeth Streb, who aims to use up her entire body during her lifetime. 73-year-old runner Barb Broad, who won her age group at Boston Marathon 4 times. Jay Grunke, who helps runners from beginners to Olympians improve their form and performance using the Feldenkrais method. And finally, there have been many episodes with rowers, young and old, including Irish Olympian Afrique Keogh and U.S. Olympian Maddie Wanamaker from way back when she was a U23 athlete. I'm going to also add to the list Mallory Hatmaker because she talks about running for her mental health and general well-being. Find all of those episodes on your favorite podcast player or at hearhersports.com. Also on the website, there are ways to reach me, sign up for the newsletter, browse through show notes, and to support the podcast through Bookshop, Buy Me a Coffee, and our new affiliate, Naboso, who make, among other things, wonderful insoles with little feet sensitizing nubs on them. Thanks everyone for being here. I'm so glad you're listening to the stories by my incredible guests. I appreciate your time and attention because there is so much to listen to out there. So thank you for choosing Hear Her Sports Podcast today. If you enjoy the show or learned something, please be sure to tell your friends about us or review the show on your podcast player. I know you've heard it before, but spreading the word really does make a huge difference as we grow. Hear Her Sports is a proud member of Evergreen Podcast. For more information or to check out other shows on the network, please visit evergreenpodcast.com. Thank you to them and to you for your ongoing support and for being part of the growth of women's sports. Until next time, bye-bye.
Have you ever wanted to know how to win a Formula One Grand Prix? I mean, really know. Know about the driver tactics from the cockpit, the strategy calls from the pit wall, and even the mind games in the paddock. There's a lot more that goes into winning a Grand Prix than just 90 minutes of racing. So every week on the F1 Strategy Report, we're taking a deep dive into the decisions that shape every result. Hey there, my name is Michael Laminato, and every week I'm joined by an expert guest from the paddock to talk through the big calls that won the race and the missteps that resulted in bitter defeat. Before every race, we'll look back at the previous year's result and consult the current form guide, and we'll be in your feed after every Grand Prix dissecting the outcome and what it means for the championship. So for your regular hit of Formula One analysis, subscribe to the F1 Strategy Report wherever you get your favourite podcasts. The Strategy Report is a Beer Mogul podcast on the Evergreen Podcasts Network. My name's Michael Laminato, and I'll catch you after the checkered flag.